Hello again. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 8th of February. This month, because of Valentine's Day, as you know, is American Heart Month. And this hour of the program, we're going to be talking about preventing heart disease, preventing heart attacks, with a special emphasis on cholesterol. There have been reports over the past couple of years that our cholesterol levels are extremely important, and it's important for us to keep track of those, maybe even for people who are very young. We'll talk about cholesterol and the role thereof in heart disease and lowering cholesterol, preventing heart disease. We'll look at a number of issues, women in heart health, and a lot of other things that I'm sure that you'll want to bring up this particular hour. Our guest is Dr. Karen Moncher. Karen Moncher is a cardiologist and a professor of medicine at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. She has a role, of course, in preventive cardiology, and she is with us this hour to talk about how we can educate ourselves concerning heart disease, how we try to prevent that in our lives, what the risk factors are, and how we take care of ourselves post-heart attack. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Dr. Karen Moncher, thank you very much for being with us this hour.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah, a great pleasure. Let's start with cholesterol. We're starting to get reports now that people should have their cholesterol checked at fairly young ages. Do you have guidelines for that?
We do. I mean, for a while we were saying, you know, at least by the age of 25, someone should have a fasting lipid panel done. That is changing gradually, partly because of the fact that such younger people are coming out with more and more heart disease and other vascular disease. And one thing that I definitely have to ask all of my patients, my adult patients, is, you know, you have this history. Have you had your kids checked? Particularly in the people who have a genetic disorder, which is clear from looking at their cholesterol. Lipoprotein A is also another type of cholesterol abnormality. And this is a purely genetic abnormality. And so if any of my patients have that, I most certainly recommend that in the teen years.
Teen years, really?
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes even before. I mean, remember that kids, unfortunately, early and earlier, are even having signs of metabolic syndrome, meaning that they're overweight. They have a body mass index that's too high for them. So in those kids, too, even over the age of, you know, 10, 11, 12, there's some evidence that we should be checking as early as that.
There may be some evidence as well, then, considering the obesity rates among young people, that heart disease will be even more prevalent 20 years hence, 30 years hence.
Yeah, isn't that sad? Yes. It's amazing to me how young patients are becoming, sadly, in, you know, in this day and age where we have so many ways to make us more healthy. And we have so much knowledge in regards to that. But the key, particularly with the healthcare reform as it is right now, is we've got to start preventing this because the cost of treating heart disease is outrageous.
Mm-hmm.
And prevention is such a good way to start dealing with that cost.
Tell me more about this lipoprotein A. I'm not familiar with it.
When I have a patient who has a strong family history of coronary artery disease, it's often something that I'll check. And most of the people who come in to the preventive clinic at UW will have that checked anyway. What it is, it's a particular type of LDL, which is the bad cholesterol. And it has a bond, a disulfide bond, that's not present on other LDLs. But it makes a person particularly thrombogenic, meaning they're more likely to cause clots, to form clots that may cause vascular disease of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
And it increases their overall vascular risk quite a bit, you know, overall in terms of having heart disease or other vascular disease earlier. So when I have a patient who has an elevated lipoprotein A, right then and there I think, okay, you are a person who is genetically determined that you're going to get some sort of vascular disease early on. And so I treat them rather aggressively. I treat them as if they have heart disease already, meaning that I want their cholesterol much, much better controlled than a person who doesn't have heart disease.
I remember interviewing a doctor not all that long ago, Dr. Monsher, who said, you know what we need to do is put statins in our drinking water.
Yeah, I know. There's a few of us who believe that.
Do you believe that too, huh?
Well, I can't say that for sure, but it is one of those things that unless we get our act together as a community, you know, young people, I mean, 40s and 30s, 30 years old and having a heart attack, and that's not unusual, unfortunately, you know, in this day and age, to have several people in the ICU in the coronary care unit who are in their 30s and 40s. But that's where I think, okay, well, we've got to do something about this. And the best way to do it is to prevent it with lifestyle changes. And certainly there are ways to do that. And we're not there yet. We haven't taught our kids that exercise is important. And gradually, I think that's coming out. At least the video games that kids are doing now have a fit program, like the Wii Fit.
Yes, right.
But it's a hard lesson to learn. And it appears that this generation, you know, is the first generation that has a lower lifespan than the generation above them, mainly because of our poor habits.
Right. And the way we eat, it's just not very good in this country. We know what we're supposed to do for the most part, but young people go the opposite direction.
Right. Well, and the other thing is, I mean, you would know this too. We're all so busy. I mean, we really don't take time anymore to exercise. And we're, oh, gosh, you know, I'm a mother and I've got a career and I've got this, that, and the other, and I got to get this laundry done. And, you know, it's really important to exercise and put it in your day as if it were another meal. You know, this is what I do every day, and that's just the way it is.
Right.
But we don't tend to pursue that. And unfortunately, in the winter, things get even worse. We eat worse. You know, the Super Bowl yesterday, good Lord. That day alone. But it's one of those things that if I say to someone like, okay, so you don't like walking and it's hard to walk outside and you've got a bad knee. What about swimming? And it's like, boy, you know, where am I going to find a pool? And look at me, you know, that's going to be expensive. And it's really not, you know, especially when you compare the price of medicine and what the consequences of not exercising are. But it can be extreme. It's a battle.
So let's go back to the cholesterol for just a moment. At what age, then, should everybody just routinely get a test? 25, are you saying? Or if you have heart disease, it should be age 12? What are the recommendations?
Yeah, great question. We don't have specific recommendations, at least as far as I know, except that everyone should, at least by the age of 25, have a fast and low panel done. Now, if they're younger and they've got metabolic syndrome, meaning any time above, you know, age 10, then I would say check it earlier. And metabolic syndrome, meaning that they're overweight, their blood pressure is off. You know, that's cholesterol and blood pressure go hand in hand. So, or if you have a family history, I would say by the mid-teen years, 15, something like that, they should get a cholesterol checked. You know, it's such an easy test to do. And particularly since we're having such a problem with obesity, it's better to do it earlier.
And can you give us desirable levels for overall LDL HDL?
Sure, yeah. For men, we give them a little bit more leeway. I'm not sure that's smart, but we do. Partly because estrogen tends to increase HDL. So women, when they're younger, naturally have much higher levels of HDL until they hit about menopause. But in general, I would say that I'd like your cholesterol, your bad cholesterol, your LDL, between 100 and 130. And that would be ideal for everyone. If you have a strong family history of heart disease and the lipoprotein A, that's when I start trying to drive your LDL down to 70. But that's in general, you know, under 130. For HDL in women, I'd like to see their HDL greater than 50. For men, their HDL should be greater than 40. And for men, it can be much more difficult to increase their HDL, but their HDL is usually indicative of their exercise. And that's one good way I can see if patients are truly exercising is how their HDL is doing. Triglycerides we like to see under 150. And triglycerides are just kind of the babies. I always think of them as they're going to go one way or the other, but they're the children. And either they'll turn into good cholesterol if you're exercising and have a good lifestyle, or they'll turn into bad cholesterol. And if you have too many triglycerides in general, then you're going to feel it. Triglycerides are babies, but they're big. And too much triglycerides in your blood will make your blood very thick, kind of like gravy. And that's how I describe it is, you know, it's fat. It's fat in your blood. And if your blood has too much fat in it, your blood becomes somewhat viscous. And so you feel worse. You're not mentally quite as sharp as you once were. You're just fatigued all the time. And that's something that, in general, we're also finding does cause more heart disease. And those studies are still kind of being done. But triglycerides and HDL don't get as much importance and emphasis as they should, as much as the LDL does. LDL being a bad cholesterol, you know, gets most of the emphasis, but the other two are also very important.
Mm. So there is, going back to exercise, there is a direct link. You can link these together scientifically based on research between exercise and good cholesterol.
Right.
Wow.
That's the best thing far and away to get your good cholesterol up is exercise. I mean, and then we start talking about other, you know, medications and supplements and things like that, but yeah, far and away, the best thing you can do for yourself is exercise.
We welcome phone calls, and we'll take them. We have a full bank here, so we'll take them right away. 800-486-8655 is our number. Dr. Karen Moncher, cardiologist, professor of medicine at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health, is our guest. Ed is first from Milwaukee. Hi, Ed.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, I'd like to know, I'm 76, and I'm on a simvastatin drug, and is there a low limit? My total cholesterol is down to 107. Seems kind of low.
Yeah, it does sound low. Having said that, it's hard for me always to look at just a total cholesterol. I always have to see the breakdown of it. And if your HDL is low, that may be why your total cholesterol is low. So that's why I would say, I got to see the rest of those in order to make a comment on that. But your LDL, you know, at some point, you're right. I start to wonder, am I providing more harm for the patient based on the dosage of the statin that they're on? Can I lower that, you know, and still get a good LDL response, meaning under 70 but not 30? You know, and once my patients start getting in the 30s and the 40s on their LDL, I start backing off on their simvastatin or the statin that they're on.
Thank you, Ed, for your call. Joanne from Racine is next. Hi, Joanne.
Hi. I have several questions. One, I've been doing a lot of reading, and that it's really the ratio between LDL and HDL. Also, the size of the platelets, some of it sticks. If it's, depending on the size, it sticks to the size of your arteries. Smaller ones, I don't think, do. Also, that CRP and homocysteine are far better factors in deciding whether you're going to have a heart attack than HDL and LDL, because 50% of the people who have heart attacks don't have high cholesterol. But
yeah,
they might have high homocysteine and CRP. I would just like her comments on those.
Yeah, you bring up a lot of great issues, and you're up to date, which is wonderful. The Jupiter trial had come out last fall, and basically what the Jupiter trial said is, gosh, you have all these people who have their cholesterol under good control, but they have high CRPs, or C-reactive proteins is what that stands for. The C-reactive protein is a measurement of any kind of inflammation, which is great. It is an indicator of what, you know, can be bad in terms of heart disease. The CRP, however, will be elevated if you have a cold, if you have allergies, if you have arthritis, any kind of inflammation. And when we took that trial to look at the people, the 50% that you were talking about, that said, you know, gosh, your cholesterol is good, but you have high CRP. When we looked at the rest of their risk factors, we found that still looking at the risk factors, for the most part, we can figure out, you know, gosh, you have a higher risk of heart disease or not. But that includes another thing that you brought up, which is the particle size. There's some tests that we use called an NMR lipoprofile. And what that is, it's kind of an MRI of your cholesterol. And it gives me an idea about if your particle sizes are small and dense or if they're large and fluffy. And the reason that that's important is that the small, dense particles are the dangerous ones. If I have a diabetic patient who comes in and is not well treated, and they have high triglycerides and low HDL, and I can't tell what their LDL is, if I were a betting woman, I'd say you have small, dense particles because that's the company it keeps. and small dense particles are dangerous. You can think of it, too, as people on the freeway. If you have 10 people on the freeway, all in small, separate cars, you have a congested freeway. But if you have 10 people on the freeway in, you know, five people in one bigger car and another five people in another SUV, then you have a much less congested freeway. That's what we want your cholesterol to do. We want your cholesterol to carpool so that you have bigger, fluffier particles, not the small, dense particles. The small, dense particles are the ones that can get into the muscle wall and cause atherosclerosis much more easily. And, you know, I have a little one at home that gets into everything, so I think of it as my little one. You know, they can get everywhere because they're so small. But you touched on a lot of topics there, and that's very true. Now, in terms of the homocysteine, this is what we know. Homocysteine is a risk factor for heart disease, absolutely. But when we treated it, and we did that about 10 years ago with folic acid, we found that the people who actually took the folic acid actually had worse results. And we gave them folic acid to decrease their homocysteine level. So the bottom line is, if you have high homocysteine, we know that that is a risk factor for vascular disease. But we don't know how to treat it except to get your cholesterol and other cardiac risk factors down. Apparently, treating it with the folic acid wasn't the right thing to do, so most of us have stopped doing that.
Let's spend a little more time on the risk factors. Some we know, don't smoke, try not to be overweight, exercise. Are there other factors that have been added to the list in recent years?
Yeah, great question. Homocysteine, for sure, the one we just talked about.
Right.
The high-sensitivity CRP is a controversial one because it's a way for me to, you know, if I'm on the fence about whether or not I should be aggressive with you, it's a great test to do and just say, boy, you know, it's, yours is off the chart. But like I said, it's so nonspecific. You know, it may be related to your rheumatoid arthritis or it may be related to something else. The metabolic syndrome encompasses a couple of different things. Your waist circumference is a big thing. Because we know that fat has a personality now. Fat is not, does not just sit there on the body and just be passive. Fat is very active in a bad way. I mean, it produces enzymes and a lot of bad things that will just worsen everything. It's a bad circle. So looking at the risk factor of your central obesity, and we do that with a waist circumference. And if men have a greater circumference than 40 inches or women greater than 35 inches, then we know you kind of meet that one criteria. And so central fat is also considered a risk factor. Low HDL has become much more of a risk factor because the patients who don't have the good cholesterol have no protection. And now we see that as, you know, gosh, that's terrible. You know, you really need some sort of protection. And the high triglycerides have also come on the list as something that can certainly be a risk factor. And in fact, there was a young guy, a basketball coach, the other day who had just outrageously high triglycerides and had a heart attack related to that. So it's something that we're, you know, we have so much to learn in cardiology. It's such a humbling field that, you know, we continue to search it out. You know, at the bottom of all of this and something we're still kind of working toward is how does our lifestyle, you know, the type A personality, the high stress, high strung. And certainly as a cardiologist who's dealing with a lot of these people, you know, it's one of those things that you have to say, listen, Ed, you got to get your act together.
Right.
You are in this job that is very stressful and you don't have any way to get rid of that stress. Exercise is a good way to do that. Have you ever thought about going to yoga or Pilates, or, you know, do you ever talk to anybody about that? Have you ever thought about cutting back? And I mean, we're the worst of the bunch. So, I mean, it's kind of the pot calling the kettle black, but it's certainly emotional stress is a risk factor.
Yes, yes. I know very well. And I'm a big believer in yoga now, too.
Yeah,
it really does.
Chill you out.
Yeah.
There's a new stress test that someone was testing over at the VA, and it was in regards to anger, you know, some of the new stress tests that they have coming out. And I can honestly say I don't know how they get the patient angry. I just presume they bring in a family member or something. But, you know, it's one of those things that it'll be very interesting to see how that one plays out.
Yeah, let us know. We'll welcome more phone calls and take more emails in a moment. It's Heart Month, American Heart Month, this hour, and well, this month of February always is. And so we're talking about prevention of heart disease cholesterol, other indicators of a potential problem with your heart, when you should be tested, what all those results mean. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Our guest is Dr. Karen Moncher, cardiologist and professor of medicine at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to an email. This is from Nick from Milwaukee, Dr. Moncher. And Nick says, I come from a family of big, hearty, food-centric Italians who also unfortunately have a strong history of early heart attacks, high cholesterol, high blood pressure, an aneurysm or two, diabetes, etc. I'm the black sheep in the family, a skinny vegan. Do I still need cholesterol testing or any other testing?
Yes. Absolutely. You know, genetics plays a huge role in all of that, and that's something I failed to mention. And it's a hard risk factor for us to quantify and qualify. But we know that if you have the genetics, you most certainly at least need to be evaluated. And for Nick, what I would consider is something like a carotid intima media thickness scan, which would just give us a better idea about his vascular health. And what this is, it's a scan of, in this case, the carotid arteries, but they can also do it on the brachial arteries. And what that does is it tells us how thick the endothelium is and gives you a vascular age based on what we know and about how thick it should be. And we say, hey, you're a 50-year-old guy and you've got the arteries of an 80-year-old. Mm-hmm. That's when I say, okay, we need to be more aggressive with you. It's fantastic, and I just applaud him for being proactive enough mm-hmm. to change his lifestyle.
Susan from Boulder Junction, hi.
Hi, good morning. Great show. Just a couple comments. I also had actually two parents that passed from different forms of coronary disease. One was atherosclerosis, and the other was from a hypertensive-related condition. Mm. So at 46, I sometimes wonder if maybe the fear is not setting me up, for one. My dad was 54, my mom was 55. So, needless to say, I try to be active, try to eat well. But these tests that you're recommending for people with a family history, are they something that you can just request from your physician that are covered by insurance when you have a history like this?
Boy, good question. And again, good for you for at least facing it head on. I often see patients the year before their parents died, so it's you're not alone in that. Yes, the tests that we have, the carotid IMT that I was looking at, as well as the NMR. The NMR you can order from anywhere. It's only done in two places in the country. One is Mayo Clinic, and one is in North Carolina. And but your physician can order that as long as they understand how to interpret it. That would be the only other thing. And that's where, getting in to see a preventive cardiologist or a preventive person in general is always a good idea. The carotid IMT, and that is covered by insurance most often. The carotid IMT test is covered by most of the insurances in the Madison area because we do it at the university. I don't know about other ones in the area. If it's not covered by insurance, it's about $300, which sometimes is, something you can afford. But it is getting to the point right now that it's starting to kind of emanate or seep out into the rest of the community. Unfortunately, there's just a small places amount of places that do it. And right now, the only one in Wisconsin that I know of is here in Madison.
And just one last question. On the homocysteine, and is it the CRP, is mm-hmm. that something that you foresee will eventually become part of a routine blood evaluation?
Another good question. You bring up such controversial topics. I love it. The high-sensitivity CRP, for a while we were doing routinely in all of our preventive patients. And you know what? We decided that wasn't helping us because either it was so high or the patient came in and said, oh, I just had a horrible cold that day, I took it 2 weeks ago. I'm feeling better now. And so then you either have to repeat it or look for another source. And because it's so nonspecific, it just doesn't help me very much. But I also have at my disposal the NMR and the carotid IMT. So I'm able to use those tests as my deciding factors. The homocysteine, I sometimes will check, particularly if I'm on the fence about, gosh, you know, her LDL is 117 and her HDL is 37. What should I do? Should I treat that? Should I not? Should I start with lifestyle changes? How aggressive should I be with her? When I'm on the fence about something like that, that's when I tend to get those tests and say, let me see if I can get a tiebreaker here. So not routinely, but if I need something to kind of push me in one direction or the other, that's when I tend to use those.
Thank you, Susan, very much for the call. Let's spend a few moments talking more about women and heart disease. It is the number one killer of women in this country, and I don't think we really are all aware of that at this point in time. Are we better about it? Do women understand heart attack symptoms, which are quite different than men's, a little better now than they used to? Do they understand preventive measures?
I think so. I mean, I'd like to say so, because the Red Dress campaign has been such a success, and I'm so touched when I see the men who are such a part of that as well.
Yes.
Which is great. I mean, it's their mothers and their wives and their sisters, and so they should be. And I think it has. I mean, I think it really has helped, and it's brought out the word that, yes, this is not just a man's disease. The one thing that I hope we continue to work on is improving the education of our practitioners, our PAs and our NPs and our MDs and our DOs and all of that, because it's still, you know, that's where you start. And if they don't believe you, then, you know, you have to go to someone else. So it goes across the board. You know, we have to start with everybody in every specialty to make certain that they're aware of it.
Ron is next from Milwaukee. Hi, Ron.
Hi there. Yes. So I was recently diagnosed with coronary artery disease, but the test factors, I mean, the tests were so sketchy, and I felt really suspicious. And my doctor wanted to rush me into an angiogram, and the stories I had heard about rush to an angiogram, oh my goodness, you have a plaque in your artery, let's rush to bypass surgery. And that happened to a friend of mine. So I refused to do that, and I've been looking at other tests. But my doctor did say that olive oil and garlic and completely changing my diet, unsaturated oils and that sort of thing would not do any good, since he was predicting a heavy dose of plaque. But this all happened over Christmas, which is a huge stress factor. Mm-hmm. The stress around Christmas, the dryness of the winter, the emotional stress. And this particular doctor had written an article about him saying broken hearts and the stress of disappointments and emotional stress could cause heart attacks. So what do I do? Is olive oil and garlic a good way to go, or do I have to take this metoprolol, lisinopril, Lipitor, and Plavix all at once?
Dr. Mantra.
Well, there's a lot of information there, and certainly not having seen what your doctor did, you know, I would say keep going to your doctor for crying out loud, you know,
right,
and make sure that you don't have any significant problems. But it sounds to me like one of the reasons he or she may have said that is that you're too far along, and that's where prevention comes in, and we should have seen you, you know, 20 years ago before it got to the point that you have plaque in your artery. Because once, you know, we know now that we can start to halt the progression of atherosclerotic disease and coronary artery disease. But if you've already got a 90% blockage, our medications, olive oil and garlic, they'll help stop it there, but you still have a 90% blockage. You know, that's something that is not going to reverse itself over the span of a year, you know, much less 20 years. So these things are important for sure, and I would never say that they weren't, but you may be too far along. And if you're at that point, that's okay. Let us help you get through this and then, you know, fix you enough that such that you can continue living a healthy life, mm-hmm, and make changes from there so that it doesn't happen again. And the Lipitor, you know, statin therapy, Plavix, they're probably just thinking about the platelets, which is very important too. So it's good questions, and it seems like a lot all at once, but once you get that diagnosis of coronary artery disease, your life changes from here.
Yeah, you don't want to fool around with it.
Right.
Yeah, you really don't. And if you feel that you need, it's a, I know a diagnosis that may shock a person, but it go to another doctor just for a second confirmation. But
absolutely.
You don't
yes.
want to risk a heart attack with that. There's no doubt about that. And what about fish oil? He brought up fish oil. That's
yeah,
the
fish oil.
That's
love
the vitamin of the
oil.
Day. You love fish oil. It's a
yeah,
good idea.
I do. It's fish oil is great for so many different reasons. You know, the omega-3s and the omega-6s, the DHA and EPA that are in that. And I started taking it for other reasons. When I was pregnant, I took fish oil. So, I mean, there's a lot of different ways to use fish oil. But it's an anti-inflammatory, which is great. And when we first started using it several years ago, and we had our patients on really high doses, it was interesting because they did know, you know, my arthritis is so much better, too.
Uh-huh.
So it was very interesting from that standpoint. But what fish oil does is it helps with your cholesterol, but it also helps with your overall vascular health. The best way to get fish oil is to eat fish. You know, the salmon, a great way to do it. The fish oil capsules that you get over the counter, you have to look and see how much DHA and EPA are in them because that's the stuff that's important. So it may say 1,200 milligrams or 1,000 milligrams on the front of the bottle, but if you turn it around and look at how much of the good stuff is actually in it, the stuff that's helpful, you'll probably only notice that it may have a total of 300 milligrams of both of those. And we really would like you to get 1,000 milligrams of the DHA and EPA daily. So essentially, what we found is that you get what you pay for. You know, there's a reason that they're two for one because you have to take four or five of the...
Woo!
Yeah, to get that. And then talk about, you know, kind of burping up fish oil. That, you know, not very pleasant.
No, right.
But you can put them in the fridge, and that helps a little bit because if you put them in the refrigerator, it helps to kind of open them up further in your digestive tract such that you don't have to burp that up.
Okay.
But, yeah, fish oil is great. I mean, it's good for prevention. It helps your good cholesterol. Helps bring down your bad, helps triglycerides in particular. And a lot of patients, you know, with high triglycerides even just start fish oil, but have to take it in pretty big doses.
Yes. And tell me what that DHA and EPA, what that needs to be again as you're shopping?
We'd like it at 1,000.
1,000, okay.
Yeah, combined, you know, the two of them combined at 1,000.
Okay. Sally from Minnesota. Hi, Sally.
Hello, Kathleen.
Hi.
Hi.
I hope you're doing well. I hope you're taking good care of yourself.
Thank you, Sally. I am. I thought I was before, but I am better now.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. We're all glad to hear it.
Thank you.
And we hope and we pray for you.
Thank you, Sally.
And thank you, Dr. Montura. Thank you for having this on.
Of course.
I am in my late 40s. I'm a non-smoker. From March, April Fool's Day, we'll say, to about Thanksgiving, I work very hard. My circumstance is very similar to that of a farm woman or farm workers working outside every day, April to Thanksgiving. My doctor checked my cholesterol a couple years back, and he said that I was very blessed, that I really didn't have to worry. I could eat whatever I wanted to, which is great because I will have that third helping of spaghetti. Yes, I will. Yes, I will. But I continue to eat like that through the winter, whole milk, cheese, eggs, you know, really bad. So right now, I am a big, fat Minnesota girl. Yes, I am. Yes, I am. But every May, by May, I will have dropped 20, 30 pounds.
Oh, Sally.
You.
Oh,
yeah,
my.
So, but the reason I'm calling is I know that my circumstance is very similar to people that work outside, farm people. Right now, I'm so out of shape, and I don't even want to look what my waist is. It's big. I can hardly even fit into my fat pants.
Yeah.
So what is my risk right now? I mean, if I go out and have a heart attack out in the fields, nobody will find me for
Oh,
right.
Sally!
Right.
No, that won't happen. See, all right, help her here. Get that waist circumference down, Dr. Roger.
I know. First off, I applaud you on working so hard between April and, you know, Thanksgiving time. That's fantastic. I wonder in my head why you don't continue that, you know, during the winter months. I mean, you must enjoy the the physical labor somewhat.
I do. I love physical labor, and I'm so blessed to be able to work hard.
Right.
Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you for letting me work so hard. But during the winter, I do my taxes. I do inventory. I take stock. I do orders. I make signs for my business next year. And I just sit around and eat and eat and eat.
Well, Yeah. We know that the yo-yo bouncers, the people who lose weight and gain weight, and that's a risk factor in and of itself because that's really tough on your body. So right then and there, I'd say, okay, well, how can we do this? How can I get you still to do, 150 minutes a week? That would be 30 minutes, 5 days a week of aerobic activity where you just get your heart rate up, and kind of, that would be my baseline and say, if you can do that and keep your weight down, that would be great. It's a good question. I mean, your genetics sound pretty good. Any family history of heart disease at all?
Yeah, a little bit, but I think that had more to do with stress.
Okay. Well, and you've got stress, though, for sure. Even in the winter, it sounds like you're under a lot of stress.
Actually, I'm not. I'm not. I'm very at peace with most everything. I'm pretty lucky.
Okay. Right now, based on what I know of you, Sally, I'd say that, you're at risk, no doubt, for having vascular disease of some sort. And if it's not going to be your heart, it might be a stroke, something like that. Only because I know that the metabolic syndrome, the waist circumference, is bad, and it's hard on your heart to have so much weight on and then, lose it, which is great, but then put it back on and do that, kind of yo-yo thing for a while. If I could... I wish you were here in Madison because I would love to meet you and figure out what your
I'll be going to the Garden Expo.
Yeah.
Oh, Sally. Okay.
Yeah.
Go see her.
Good. Exactly.
Yeah.
It would just be so interesting because is there a way that you can? I mean, do you try to regulate yourself at all during the winter?
No, I don't. I'm a lazy fat girl right now.
Sally.
That's what it is because I know that in the springtime it's so easy to lose weight in the spring.
You remind me of all the men in my family. Like, they can lose weight at the drop of a hat, and I hate them all for that.
Tell me that.
But, it is, you certainly are at risk. I would say nothing else than this is hard on your heart to yo-yo like this. And then during the time period that you are, bigger, when you have more fat on you, you're at risk. And although your cholesterol is great, we're not talking about any of the other stuff. There's many, many other risk factors, and the least of which for you would be the waist circumference and the increased fat in that area. And somehow what I would do is try to channel some of that other energy that you have during the winter into more exercise. I hate to take food away from patients. Now, we always have to take a little bit away, but I love eating myself. So it's one of those things that, I hate to say, you can never have that again, and that's ridiculous. Yeah, across the board, that's ridiculous. Except maybe some of the Culver stuff. But, outside of that, really, there's not much that I would say you can't ever have again, but everything in moderation. And that includes during the winter, even when we're all cooped up,
right.
Sally,
make an appointment. Go see her. And
yeah, I'm going to see you.
Call us. Yeah.
I want to go to the garden, just to uplift my spirits. So that would be great.
Okay, Sally.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much for your call. I like good, honest calls like that. They're
no
right.
kidding.
Yeah. And what about, let's talk more about the waist thing. I'm doing this for my own benefit, but other people must be like me. I have tended to, I had a heart attack, in case you didn't know that, a couple of years ago. And
I heard that.
Yeah, it sort of... knocked me out. I was never expected such a thing, but I wasn't a very good girl. I had smoked cigarettes and I had high cholesterol, but I didn't know I had high cholesterol because I never had my cholesterol checked, which was stupid. But I now feel pretty good, but I have tended to gain weight probably from completely eliminating cigarettes.
Right.
And it's in my stomach area, and it's just like my mom. I'm growing old just like my mom did. And I don't know how you get rid of that. I mean, do you keep doing sit-ups or do you just have to die it to lose the 10 pounds that you're over?
Unfortunately, well, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, sit-ups will help your muscles, but you can still have a huge layer of fat over that muscle that's not going to go away with sit-ups. So you most definitely have to do aerobic exercise to get rid of that.
Right.
And that means getting your heart rate up and sustaining it for, 20 to 30 minutes a day and kind of working your way even further than that. I'd love for my patients to have 300 minutes a week of aerobic activity, but that's an hour 5 days a week of you know, aerobic exercise.
Really? That much?
Yeah, I know. Wow. Isn't that something? It's a lot. But it's just interesting because it's one of those things that because we're all so sedentary, or most of us are in our jobs, or some of us say, well, you know, I walk a lot during the day. I get up, I go to the other, you know, the coffee machine and back. And it that's good, except you're not having a sustained amount of getting your heart rate up. And so usually I start, you know, try 20 to 30 minutes a day. And you can break that up if you want into 10-minute segments or whatever. But if you can get your heart rate up, you know, for that time period, you will lose weight. And, you know, there was a big article that came out last year about dieting and, you know, should we have more protein, less carbohydrates, you know. And the study they had done was on 800 individuals with four different types of diets, you know, either high protein, low carb, or low fat, high carb. And across the board, everybody lost weight only if they, you know, didn't eat as much. So there's nothing brilliant about losing weight. It's calories in, calories out. And so unfortunately, most of us need a coach to call us up every day and be like, I know you're exhausted. I know it's February in Wisconsin and you hate it, but you have got to get your butt up and start exercising. And that's, you know, that's the bottom line.
All right. That's the bottom line. I hear it. Thank you. We'll take more phone calls in a moment. The number is 800-486-8655. This is American Heart Month, and we're talking about prevention of heart disease, treatment of heart disease, but mostly prevention this hour of the show. Our guest is Dr. Karen Moncher. She's a cardiologist and a professor of medicine at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Returning to phone calls, Sally from Kenosha. Hi.
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 Hi, Dr. Moncher?
Yeah, you can call me Karen.
Okay, Karen, I don't know, maybe I can go to you, but I'm going to be 62, and I've had high cholesterol since I was probably 30, the first time I was checked, and my dad died of, you know, heart. And I don't take anything except for I take lisinopril for high blood pressure. And the doctors never... one doctor had me take a couple of medications for my cholesterol a long time ago, but they both made me sick. And my husband's job causes us to move around, and I live in Kenosha, and that was when I lived in Dallas. But I've always gone swimming. I'm an excitable person. I was born that way, so I was told. Anyway, but I don't do 300 minutes a week.
Do you do anything?
I swim. I've been swimming for 40 years.
That's I do,
fabulous.
Too.
How
I
much
love
of
it.
That do you do?
Huh?
How much of that do you do?
Well, I used to always swim, like, and it brings my cholesterol down, because if I move and I don't swim for a month because I got to find a place and blah, 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 you know, then and I go to the doctor or something, my cholesterol is like 300. It'll bring it down to 270.
Yeah, right.
But, I mean, it'll be over 300. And then it comes down to 270, 260. If I stop, it goes up. But, I mean... I got sick on the medicine, you know.
Do you know what it was, what medicine you took?
Yeah, I heard somebody say something about one of them, just one of your...
Probably a statin, like Lipitor.
I took Lipitor, and then I took another one. And they made me sick, and I couldn't work because I can't be... I was dizzy all the time.
Is that... Yeah, when you say they made you sick, is that what you felt, was dizziness?
Yeah, and kind of out of body, and I couldn't focus. And I mean, because, you know, I felt sick.
Yeah,
right. And I would go to work, and I'd feel like, I thought, no, I can't do this. I have to work. But, I mean, I need to go to some, like, doctor, and I'll go to Madison if necessary, because I know I need to have these tests, because, I mean, it's my dad's sister had a stroke, and his sister's died before he did, and I think it was because, you know, they never studied women. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
But now when I swim 300, it actually, every single stroke, since I've been doing this for 40 years, my arms, every stroke hurts.
Yeah.
On my arm, my whole arm. And I do yoga in the morning, and I've been doing that for years, like, but no, just since I lived for 6 years. And I just do it to a DVD and for like 45 minutes.
That's wonderful.
That is fantastic.
But I have to, because I get all, I get stressed so easily.
Yeah,
it's just been a part of my life.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're amongst friends. I mean, and in this day and age, I don't know, there's a lot of us who are, you know, and our fast life doesn't help
right.
anything. Well, Sally, first off, don't worry about the 300. I mean, anything you can do to get your exercise in is great. And if you start at 5 minutes a day, that's okay. That's all right. If you get out there and get active, that's great. So start there and just, you know, work your way up. Do what you can. And if you only get to, you know, 20 minutes 5 days a week, that's okay for now. We'll keep working with you. In regards to your cholesterol, it sounds like you just need a preventive doctor or, you know, an internal medicine doctor who's interested in some of this stuff. And there's certainly a lot of those in Milwaukee, too, who are wonderful. I have so many good colleagues across the state. And there's a lot of other things you can do besides statin therapy to treat your cholesterol. And, you know, lifestyle changes beginning, you know that those work for you, so that's great. But the fish oils are another thing, and we can even give you a prescription form of fish oils or a lower dose or a different type of statin. Statins are not all right. The same. So, you know, you might need a water-soluble one as opposed to a fat-soluble one and see if that works for you. And so there's a lot of different things to do, and you are certainly not hopeless. I mean, there's a lot that can be done. But I definitely encourage you to go and see someone with that family history. That's the scary part.
Right. Yeah. Thank you, Sally, very much for your call. Here's an email that has come in from Paul. For those of us who have numbers that our doctors define as slightly elevated, what can we do other than wait until it's bad enough for us to go on statins?
Making
the assumption we know how to and will exercise, what diet should we look at? What do you think of red yeast rice? How much should you take? And should a borderline person ask their doctor about taking niacin?
Yeah, great questions. So first off, in terms of the borderline, this is your wake-up call. That's what I always say. As soon as you start saying you're borderline, that's your wake-up call to start changing your lifestyle so that you don't go in that direction. So if you can get a dietary consult, those are always very helpful. I think people are always amazed at the foods that they avoid that are actually good for them, including nuts in moderation. Mm-hmm. The second thing is in terms of diets, Mediterranean diet is essentially what I say. In general, everything in moderation. You know, when you go out and celebrate, it's okay for you to have some red meat every now and then. But that means once a month at most, not, you know, two times a week. Then if you can do some other things like lifestyle changes, even in terms of supplements, you know, I'd start fish oils. I'd see if I can find something that I like to do in terms of exercise and go for that. And again, start small. Try to do it 10 minutes a day and then work your way up if you can. And then finally, in terms of the niacin, the over-the-counter niacin doesn't do much. The problem with that is that in order to affect your cholesterol, you need very large doses of niacin, but your liver can't metabolize all of that at once. So that's why you need the Niaspan, which is the prescription form. And this isn't, when none of us get any, you know, feedback or cutbacks or pay for this or anything like that. I love Niaspan, but I got to tell you that my patients have trouble taking it because of the flushing reaction. Having said that, that's what you're supposed to get with it. Hmm. It means that it's working. And you can blot that reaction with aspirin, taking it with food. Finally, the last thing, I keep on forgetting more things in that email, the red yeast rice extract that's where we got our statins. I mean, that was a Chinese herbal medication
really?
That has been out there forever. Yeah, and that's essentially what it is. It's a statin. And it's fine to take if you know how much is actually in it. Because it's not FDA regulated, I never know. And most of the red yeast rice extract that has been produced now in the United States or is being sold doesn't have much of the active ingredient in it because of the problems that come with that. You still need to check your liver enzymes. And the great thing about, you know, just using a statin that we have is that we regulate that naturally then. You know, we check your liver enzymes. We can see how much you're getting because it can still cause the same problems other statins can.
Matt is next from Middleton. Hi, Matt.
Good morning.
Hi.
Just to follow up with the niacin, I'm one of the people that it actually worked good for. I take the over-the-counter extended release that my doctor told me to take, a gram a day, and I went from 18 on my HDL, which he said was dangerous. Over the course of a year and a half, it's now up to 39.
Fabulous. Yeah, you have the extended release. Interesting.
Yeah. But my questions are, is in speaking with my doctor, because my family has a very good history of dying in your late 30s from heart attacks.
Oh, my.
And so he said, we're going to put you on a statin right away. And that brought my LDL from 212 down to 130. And the niacin brought the HDL up. But my question is, on my father's side, they all lived into their hundreds. And he has a fairly high LDL number, but his HDL is 69.
Ooh,
and his doctor said that, you know, they're finding that the ratio is also important, not necessarily just having, you know, that magical 40 on the HDL for men and the magical 130 for the LDL, but the ratio is important too.
That is correct. Yeah. I mean, if you have those magical numbers, the ratio is good. But you're right. I mean, that's the importance of HDL. And essentially looking at that, if you have high LDL and high HDL, you know, I still get a little nervous, honestly, with high LDL, but I'm thrilled beyond belief with high HDLs, particularly in men, because it's so difficult. And niacin is a great way to increase that.
Thank you, Matt, so much for the call. And we are out of time. Do you have a website that you should recommend for us or not?
Yeah.
All
right. Well, yeah, there's one called www.heartdecision.
Heartdecision.
Right. Okay. .com.org.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right, great. Well, you're a real natural on the radio. Thank you so much for being with us.
You
have a lot of information. Thanks.
Thank you.
Our guest this hour, Dr. Karen Moncher, cardiologist, professor of medicine at UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, to Chrissy Peace, who has just joined us now. Welcome her the days ahead for on-air production. Thank you.